Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is another one from our hometown. There's a sense of mystery because the fate of the victim is still unknown. This is the case of Tammy Jean Daniel. Tammy Jean Daniel was born on October 20th, 1962 to Norma and Robert Jefferson Hinsdale. She grew up in the small community of Piney View, West Virginia. To me, it seems like Tammy grew up as a typical West Virginia girl. She was a cheerleader at Piney View Elementary and at Daniel's Bible School. She loved to ride motorcycles, which it's actually something her family did a lot. She was an animal lover, so much so that on her 17th birthday, her parents gave her a small Yorkie that she named Shasta.
Cute!
She graduated from Woodrow Wilson in 1980. She ended up not going to college after graduation. She did marry Billy Wheeler not too long after graduating.
Any idea on how long after graduating?
Honestly, in my research, I couldn't find, you know, a time frame. But sadly, after trying to make it work, the relationship ended.
What's that?
You know, I wish I knew. I do know that her family absolutely loved Billy. So, to me, it kind of seems maybe right person, wrong time. I just couldn't find anything negative on them.
Assuming she worked after school.
She did. She worked some few odd and ends jobs. I know she waited tables at Freddy's Diner, which I really hope you know where that is, because I have tried to dig and dig. Couldn't find anything at all.
I asked Mom, and she said, I believe it was in Uptown Beckley.
I mean, I'm sure. I feel like everything was in Uptown Beckley. She also worked at the Checkmark Club on Harper Road.
We're at on Harper.
So, I'm not sure if I'm right. I did Google the address I got from it. So if I'm wrong, if anyone is listening who knew where the Checkmark Club was, or if you're watching, please correct me. But from the address I found online, it's located where the Super 8 Motel is.
I remember being little going up on Harper Road. And Harper Road was back in the 80s. Oh my God. Of course, you had the Hampton, but then where the McDonald's is, that was the Hilton.
There was a hotel there?
Yes, it was the Hilton. And I had a big, huge marquee up there. And people were having their sweet 16s there, everything. They would put a happy birthday, so and so, and all this stuff up there. Oh, yeah. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I know. When I get old enough, I want my birthday here.
Yeah, I know, Mom, when I was born, I know Long John Silver's was across from the hospital because they had a drive through. And then it might be where, See Adam Tony or somewhere is. There was, a burger restaurant, Burger Boy or something
No, where the old See Adam Tony was, right where they built the new one, that was Burger King.
There was another burger restaurant there, because I remember Mom saying it had the best burgers.
They had Burger King, and then across from Raleigh General, there was Hardee's, and right next to Hardee's was McDonald's. And when they closed that McDonald's on Harper Road, it actually turned into a Japanese restaurant for a little bit.
I did not know that. Sometime in 1983, Tammy met Ronald Jean Daniel, and the two started to date. Jean was a coal miner working at Beckley Mining.
How long were they dating?
For a little over a year, then they got married on December 8th, 1985. This was Tammy's second marriage and Jean's third.
Any children?
He had some, and what I could find in my research is that Tammy really loved them.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
June 2nd, 1987 seemed like it was just another typical day for Tammy. That evening, she went to JC's Club in Stanford, which was across from the skating rink, which I never knew that there was one there. I feel like there was always one, like, somewhere. At some point during the night, she ran into her uncle, who joined her driving around town. At some point, he dropped her off at Joey's Elsit in Beckley, which was located on South Fayette Street, right below the Black Knight Country Club.
Ooh, I think I remember.
Yeah, I feel like it was one of those, like, metal buildings later turned into, like, a paintball place. Now it's just empty, I think.
I don't really, I can't remember.
I could be wrong. We have no idea why Tammy wanted to go there, but we have seen at some point during the night that Jean was also there. Around 2 a.m., two officers with the Beckley Police Department walked up to her and told her she needed to call someone to come pick her up. So she called her parents. They picked her up around 3 a.m. and drove her back to her home on Lindy Street. Her parents tried to get her to come home and stay with them, but she insisted that she wanted to go home. Her mom said that Tammy said it was her home and her husband, and that's where she wanted to go.
I can kind of see it, but I actually see both sides.
Yeah. However, In the months leading up to this night, Tammy had been photographed with multiple black eyes. She even had gone in for a splenectomy because of damage to her spleen, which this caused her parents to be hesitant about letting her go to the house.
Had she stayed with her parents before this night?
I wish I could say yes, but I couldn't find anything on that. So I assume she was kind of just still living in the home she shared with Jean. When her parents arrived to the house in the early hours on June 2nd, 1987, it was dark and the doors were locked. Her mother wanted to go knock on the doors and wake Jean up, but Tammy told her she better not. Not wanting to disturb him, Tammy told her parents that she would just sleep in the tent for the night.
A tent.
Yeah. There was one in the front yard that I believed had a motorcycle under it.
There's just so much already that I have so many questions about with this. Yeah. I mean, she goes to the same club that her husband's at.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of makes you wonder if there were some issues going on at that given point and things like that for them to arrive separately.
Mm-hmm.
Then her uncle's there with them.
Uh-huh.
The police are there. Mm-hmm. Something had took her for the police to be there.
Well, that or I kind of took it as possibly they were just telling people, hey, it's closing time. You got to go. Like maybe they just were doing their rounds.
Let me just say,
that's how I took it. Like I didn't see anything that like anything happened.
So let me just put it on my little theory. Because your girl here used to go to club and back in the day. I didn't go too often because Well, let's just say you're not going to meet a good person at the club. But I would go. There was never police there, nothing at all. Mm-hmm. It was always, hey, last call.
Yeah.
Last call was right before the bar closed. Then after that, they would keep going until the bar, and then they would just eventually say, hey, be careful going home, da da da, have a good night. And they would close up. And it was always around 2 o'clock in the morning, 2, 3, because there are laws that bars can only be open to a certain time. But never in all them times I have been out has it ever had police in there. So that just caught me off a little bit with that right there. Now, my other thing about it, too, is having to have your spleen removed is not a common procedure.
No.
At all.
No.
It's not. And for there to be so much damage done, what was occurring for all that damage to be done?
Yeah, I have no idea.
And things of that nature, because I know when I had mono, I was told I couldn't do nothing because my spleen was so enlarged that they were scared that the slightest thing would cause my spleen to rupture and I would have to go into emergency surgery, which is pretty scary when you don't have health insurance. But I mean, it's just nothing. I mean, it has to be something major going on for them to remove your spleen.
Yeah.
Then, just knowing how terrified it sounds that when they took her home, not to wake her husband. I'm sorry. I don't care what anybody says. A good husband is going to make sure that you get home safe.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. He is not going to care if you wake him up. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you say that you would sleep outside before you would wake him, baby, where's the little man waving the red flags? Because that is red flag material. Every bit of that is red flag.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. I'm Dan. And I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcast.
Which her mom didn't want her to spend the night in a tent, but she got back in the truck and her parents drove off. They didn't make it far before she had a gut-wrenching feeling. She told her husband to stop the truck. She got out and walked back to Tammy's house. Before she made it there, she heard a loud slam, which she thought, you know, maybe the storm door just shut. Where Tammy was just seconds before, she wasn't there, so she went back and got in the truck. Sadly, that night would be the last that either of them would see Tammy alive. Around 9 a.m. the next morning, her parents went to go check on Tammy. Jean told them that she wasn't home. However, they did overhear Jean talking to a neighbor.
What did he say?
He said that he told Tammy to leave around 4 a.m. Her parents returned again, and she still wasn't there. This time, Jean told them that they got into an argument around 4 or 5 a.m. and that he told her to leave. The last time he saw Tammy, she was walking down the street in a black leather jacket, black t-shirt, and jeans. Jean promised that he would let her parents know when she returned.
Is this new for them?
Honestly, no. She had left Jean on multiple occasions, but she always stayed in touch with her parents. On Thursday, June 4th, during one of their many visits, they saw a two-toned van parked outside the home. Just days after Tammy's disappearance, Jean had moved out of their home.
Hmm. not suspicious at all. Also, another thing too, June in a black leather coat.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I don't want to play like devil's advocate here, but it's not weird that he moved out.
But it is weird too.
Well, not really, because, you know, they were actually going to move from the home the next week. So, I mean, he was doing what he was supposed to do because the lease was up. But it's not the best timing for the behavior and all of that. Mm-mm. It was said during this time that her parents were visiting that all of the windows were open. On June 7th, 1987, just 5 days after Tammy's disappearance, her parents called the Raleigh County Sheriff's Department to report their daughter missing.
Why didn't Jane report her?
I guess the same way that Norman Stevenson reports Sharice missing. With her parents calling in this report, the Raleigh County Sheriff's Department started to work on the case immediately. For weeks, Tammy's face was in the local newspaper. Police interviewed Jean, which he kept to the same story. She left home around 5 a.m. and he didn't know where she was going. Which, luckily for investigators, it didn't take long for their first tip to come in. Some neighbors said that they heard a loud argument around 4 a.m. on the night Tammy disappeared. According to another, Jean asked to borrow their vacuum cleaner 3 days after she disappeared. When he returned it, there was a strong odor coming from it. They said that it was also covered in an unknown sticky substance, which, after looking at it, investigators proved the substance to be blood. Human blood. It was in fact the same blood as Tammy.
Again, not suspicious at all. None.
With this, law enforcement was able to obtain a search warrant for the couple's home. When they went to search the home, it only had a sofa in it. However, in the master bedroom, they did discover a large blood stain on the carpet that went down into the carpet padding.
You know true crime the way I know true crime.
I know true crime the way you know true crime.
That was a lot of blood for it to go down through the carpet padding.
Oh yeah.
A whole lot. And, I mean, there's just so many red flags. Mm-hmm. So many red flags. Yeah. And it sounds just like anybody else in a panic when they've done something wrong. They're trying to get as much out there as they remotely can.
I mean, yeah. But
was everything cleaned, though? Was the room cleaned?
From what I gathered, it was, but the stain was still there. So when questioned about the carpet, he said he had no idea how it got there or what it could be from. He was still saying that, you know, Tammy left on her own.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe
and watch for deer.
And don't kill me. I do want to, like, backtrack for a few seconds.
Okay.
On May 16th, 1987, Tammy and Jean had an altercation in which he stomped her face, breaking her nose. On another occasion, he beat her to the point where he broke his wrist. Before her disappearance, Tammy had an outstanding DVP on Jean. She decided to drop it.
When did she do that?
The day before she disappeared. Which reminds you a lot of Brenda Gail Lambert.
Ladies, a life lesson. Really quick. A DVP is nothing. It's nothing. It is a piece of paper. If you're having to get a DVP, you need to arm yourself. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. Do not be alone. Be with somebody. Make sure that they're a good source too. Make sure you surround yourself with good people who are going to protect you. But again, a DVP does nothing. It yep. does nothing. There's no restraining orders in West Virginia. Do you know that?
It blows my mind.
No restraining orders. It is literally just a DVP, mm-hmm. which does nothing.
Yeah.
In January of 1988, Jean was indicted for the murder of Tammy. 2 months later, in March of 1988, the charges were dropped by the prosecuting attorney due to a lack of evidence. A few months later, in July of 1988, Jean was involved in a shooting which left one man dead and another injured. According to newspaper articles I've found, he was at a local bar called Legends with some friends. Around 3:30 a.m., they all left the bar. While on the way to the car, they were jumped. Jean had several injuries, a cut to the head, a broken dental partial plate, and an eye injury. Seven people piled into the vehicle. Jean was in the passenger seat. He claimed to have been fearful and pulled out his gun, raising it to the driver's head. Attempting to intervene, the people in the back moved forward. He fired three shots into the back of the vehicle, killing Walter Dale Morgan and injuring Cecil Miller. Jean pled self-defense in court, but was found guilty on charges of first-degree murder and malicious wounding in January of 1989. He was sentenced to life imprisonment with the recommendation of mercy. Years later, he was released on parole.
In 2007, Chief Detective Larry Lilly with the Raleigh County Sheriff's Department received evidence from an anonymous source which allowed him to obtain a search warrant to search private property in the Sand Lick area for the body of Tammy Jean Daniel. Unfortunately, they were unable to obtain any proof that Tammy had been buried in the area they were searching.
In March of 2000, Tammy Jean Daniel was legally declared dead. In honor, her mother started Tammy's Flower Garden as a memorial. In 2017, her father, Jeff Hinsdale, passed away, never knowing what happened to his daughter. Her mother, Norma, and brother, Jeffrey, still remain hopeful that one day they will know what happened to Tammy.
It's been 39 years since the disappearance of Tammy Jean Daniel.
If you or anyone you know have any information on Tammy, please contact Crime Stoppers at 304-255-7867.
You can also contact the Raleigh County Sheriff's Department at 304-255-9300. We'll be back next week with a new case. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.